Today I'm going to share what I've learned from two marriages about what really destroys trust and intimacy in relationships. It's not what you did. It's why you did it. And the fact that most likely you have no idea. You have no idea why you did it. Whatever it was. You were cruel, unfaithful, insensitive, naive, demanding, needy. Or they were. Still, if they were, they have no idea why. When we're unconscious, when we are stuck in the matrix, we're supremely unreliable. Our feelings, our decisions, our choices arise from murky inner drives about which we are clueless. Instead of relating to others from pure love, which I believe most people intend to, we tend to engage in control dramas driven by the unresolved past in us, those old samskaras that we keep talking about. We can easily get lost in cyclic attempts to alleviate our often subconscious fears and insecurities and our lack of divine connection by subtly or overtly manipulating others to get our emotional needs met. This leads to suffering, obviously. As we become more conscious, we gain the courage to take a fearless inner inventory and question our true motivations. What is the deeper purpose of a relationship beyond falling in and out of love, beyond the creation of children and families? What is it here to teach us? Mass awakening continues to shake up the status quo on our planet day by day, and this year is going to be bigger than ever. The divine evolutionary impetus behind this demands a re-examination of our values and a seismic shift away from disempowerment to sovereignty, from systemic dysfunctionality to global healing. And it's happening. This resonates on the interpersonal level, I believe, as a yearning to recenter our relationships around authenticity, truth, and divine reconnection. Global social upheaval on the collective level, which we're seeing plenty of, is reflected by the shifting sands of relationship and family dynamics on the personal level. Everything's changing. And, of course, we all know that change can be painful as we let go of our illusions. But as always, if we're willing to assume responsibility for our part of things and open our eyes, we begin to heal the inner divisions within us from which our distortions spring. All relationships can be vehicles for transformation to a higher order. It all depends on whom you serve. So, whom do you serve? I'll ask you that again a little bit later. Take a deep breath and remember, there's a power. Breathing you. This is your space of sanity in an evolving world, where we learn about spiritual law and how to apply it to our lives in a way that is practical and life-changing. This is where we remember truth to make the world a better place, one person at a time. I'm Claire Lautier, inspirational speaker, teacher of the technology of transformation, and a certified life mastery consultant and spiritual growth mentor. Welcome to the Grace Space. Last time, I introduced the concept of ethical relationship, which I see as an Aquarian perspective on relating. The term ethical relationship was not coined by me, by the way. I had only ever heard it from my teacher, but it actually comes from the book The Celestine Prophecy of many years ago. So why does ethical relationship belong to the Aquarian paradigm? Well, it necessitates that we be consciously conscious, that we understand that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, and that we incarnated on Earth to grow, to liberate ourselves from the matrix, and to merge with the source again, consciously. If you haven't heard me talk about the change of the ages, in 2012, we officially went into the astrological age of Aquarius after having been in the age of Pisces for 2,160 years. These astrological ages have to do with the precession of the equinoxes and the different energetic signatures of the stars and planets and their positions relative to us and the frequencies we're receiving from them, kind of like satellites, I guess. I've done a couple episodes on this transition to the age of Aquarius, which I'll link to in the show notes. Each astrological age has defining characteristics that influence our consciousness. For instance, in the Piscean paradigm of the last age, top-down pyramidal structures of power were predominant, with the few ruling the many, right? The few ruling the many with total control. Whereas in the Aquarian paradigm, that's no longer the case. The circle is predominant as opposed to the pyramid. It's grassroots up. It's the people. It's community and co-creation. That's the new energy. And as you can see, it's in opposition to the old energy. With the dawn of the Aquarian Age, and we're only about 12 years into it officially, we've seen an awakening of consciousness to the fact that we have been dominated by a comparatively very small minority of ruling elites, even though traditional monarchies that wielded power have more or less disappeared from the earth, and in many places, democracies were installed. Overall, the power has still not been in the hands of the people. And even in so-called democracies, it's come to light increasingly to what degree those are actually controlled by globalist interests that rule over huge swaths of the population through pretty diabolical systems of control. We're seeing this really strong attempt by that old energy, no longer in the shadows really, to maintain its stranglehold over humanity. But at the same time, we're seeing the growing awareness of having been subject to that control. So it simply isn't possible for that old paradigm to dominate anymore. The crumbling of the old systems is inevitable, and it's dramatic. So hold on to your hat. So our nervous systems are being massively challenged thanks to a coincidence or a confluence of this change of the astrological age, along with the massive increase in solar flares over the last few years and how we're moving through the photon belt. This wave of awakening that's sweeping through the Earth's population is upsetting the status quo in a big way. And all of this evolutionary energy comes crashing into our bodies that are in many cases systematically weakened by toxic air, water, food, radiation, EMFs, bioweapons, and drugs, not to mention the psychological aspect of mind control, censorship, and propaganda everywhere you turn. This is why I recommend Kundalini Yoga to help your body keep up with all the changes and the upgrades. And there are other free healing technologies already within us that can be of supreme benefit, which we'll talk more about this season. It's a perfect storm, and the pressure and the stress of these major, major changes and upgrades calls forth a great deal of questioning and upheaval on the collective level and, of course, on the personal level. Deep questioning. Like, why am I here? What is this all about? What's going on this planet? How did we even get here? Where did we come from? Are there other beings out there that we might be connected with? What is this whole shebang? So to refocus our lens on the personal again, because of course, everything is fractal in nature, in the universe. Everything is resonant on every level of life. We can see the influence of these different astrological ages, these different paradigms, this big sweeping change that we're going through. We see this influence also in our relationships. In the Piscean Age, marriage was not based on love, but strategic consolidation of power. Romance and marriage did not necessarily go together until more recently, when we tried to merge the idealized masculine and feminine archetypes of the troubadours with the matrimonial state. When the main objective is the consolidation of power, the creation of children, and the perpetuation of lineages, it doesn't really matter whether you get along, much less are in love, as long as you do what's expected of you, and that was understood. The evolution of consciousness was not the top priority, but now, fully in the Aquarian age, many people are starting to awaken to something deeper, and quantum physics is revealing to us our innate creative nature as consciousness itself. As human beings, we're starting to remember our spiritual nature as source energy beings, our galactic inheritance from beyond this planet, and starting to trust that all the answers we sought out there and that we were programmed to seek out there are already within us, including the power to heal from all the trauma of the last age and what's been perpetrated on us more recently. This shifts the power dynamic massively from the perception of power being outside yourself, which is disempowerment, to re-empowerment, rediscovery that the power is within, that it was within all along, and that we can heal. We can heal ourselves. We were designed that way. We are perfect, whole, and complete in and of ourselves. It's not just a nice idea. It is a reality. So it's natural that there should be a shift in emphasis in our relationships toward healing as well. All relationships, and particularly intimate relationships, are vehicles for transformation to a higher order. If you go into relationships knowing that the other person is you, that they're a mirror, that you're going to bring up each other's deep-seated distortions and patterns for healing, and you're going to be bringing up the ego's resistance and clinging, if you know that the purpose of relationship is to show you where you are blocking the flow of love within yourself, it changes everything. But we need to recognize that we're still coming at relationships from a broken place, from a deep belief in our insufficiency. And this is accepted as normal. I mean, it's accepted as normal that we should see the other person as a solution to our brokenness, because we're coming at life from a place of insufficiency, because we couldn't make it on our own when we were born. We were totally dependent, and we've grown up inside a systematically disempowering structure of control that we couldn't even see. It was just the water we were swimming in. We've never known anything else but this fishbowl. But as consciousness awakens to itself, we're beginning to see the extent to which we've been duped, disempowered, hobbled, and kept ignorant of the sacred knowledge that can free us. So let's have some compassion for ourselves. For the first 7 years of life, we were totally dependent on how we were set up by our own karma, where we ended up, and with whom, and the circumstances. But beyond that point, we start to be able to influence timelines by how we respond to our environment. But at the same time, we've also been programmed by then with all the patterns and conditioning picked up in our environment, our family and social systems, so that our choices are bound by all that programming unless, by grace, we come across the universal laws and are able to break free. Imagine or remember yourself at about 8 years old, facing the world with everything you've been programmed with, for better or for worse, and all your natural gifts and inborn tendencies, your physical, mental, and emotional constitution. You've already been through multiple traumas or micro-traumas due to the unconsciousness of the world that you were born into, no matter how loving your family of origin. You have grown up inside a matrix of limitation and developed coping mechanisms to protect yourself from the pain you couldn't handle. You already have a very particular way of experiencing the world, and it's unique to you. No one else sees things remotely the same way, and yet we assume that they do. Relationally, the assumption is that we are insufficient and incomplete, and there's someone out there who can complete us. After all, when you were a baby, you had to cry when you needed something, and hopefully someone came to take care of your need. We're all the walking wounded. I mean, it's pretty rough inside, if you're being honest. But the assumption is that the right person can make it better. The search for this person, or job, or status, or whatever the object of desire is that we think will solve our problem, is a dangling carrot that keeps us from going within to face this feeling of incompleteness and not okayness that is driving us, and to transform it within ourselves. This is the unique opportunity of being human and that ethical relationship affords us if we are conscious. We have the opportunity to transcend a primally deep-seated sense of separation and insufficiency to discover that we are a fractal of the universe itself. We can know this consciously and activate our innate divinity, whether we're on our own or in a relationship. This is amazing. No other creature on earth has the ability to be consciously conscious of being conscious. And even though we have enormous inertia to overcome in the process, incredible challenges on our way to realizing that we have everything within, we've never had more support than in this moment of planetary awakening and ascension of frequency. Yogananda called this awakening self-realization, when you realize the self, the true self, which is already innately and forever perfect, whole, and complete. Until that day, though, we haven't understood that there's nothing out there. It's all in here. We still think someone out there can solve this problem of incompleteness and lack and insufficiency and neediness that we experience in here. And now we've gone and involved another person in our inner mess, and that's karma. And we have expectations of them. They need to fit our conceptual model of what completes us. And when they eventually disappoint us by falling short of those expectations, which is of course inevitable, well, look out. That can trigger all the devastation of our early wounds. And then we think, that must not be the right person. There must be someone else. And we start the search all over again. How do we get out of this mess? A lot of it is rooted in our belief systems, on what we believe to be the true purpose of intimate relationship. Will we even allow ourselves to decide that for ourselves? Or do we just swallow all the cultural and familial conditioning around it? And that depends on to what degree you are awake or asleep. It depends on whether your commitment in life is to security, familiarity, and fitting in which case you become an exploitable commodity and easy prey in the current world situation, or to truly serving the soul, which is all about disrupting your familiar sense of self. Whom do you serve? My teacher asked me that somewhat severely a couple years ago. Whom do you serve? The finite or the infinite in you? On the spectrum of relationship, we move from darkness to light, unconscious to conscious, just as in everything else. An unconscious relationship can become more conscious if both parties are committed to remaining vigilantly conscious. It depends on the people. It depends on what you serve, what love means to you, and what you believe the purpose of relationship is deep down. Not what you say it is on your Valentine's Day card, but what you're really after. So let's be radically honest. If in your relationships you're being driven consciously or unconsciously by neediness and dependency, if your need is to have someone so you won't be alone, to have emotional or financial security, or to serve family and tradition as your highest values, you will always compromise the soul and the true self to maintain your relationships. Yes, because there is something higher than family, higher than human love. No judgment. Human love is beautiful. Family is beautiful. But we have 7 chakras, not 4. I'm speaking to those who can hear this. It isn't for all ears. It isn't that in serving the highest in you, you cannot encompass human love, family, work, or material accomplishment. But if you serve those things without serving the highest, they will never be as good as they could be. Why? Because whatever you focus the beam of your powerful consciousness on, without that consciousness acknowledging its own source, will be only a shadow of its potential for expression. It isn't being nourished by its true connection to source. If, on the other hand, the purpose of relationship is growth in service to the highest in you and the other, that changes things. Your objective is not to stay together at any cost, because you said you would when you were unconscious and unreliable, but to use the sacred container of your relationship to open yourself deeper and deeper to the other as love, to surrender your separateness and merge with God in yourself and the other. This is a much more profound commitment and requires courage to open to a depth of intimacy that most people shy away from. It doesn't mean that you won't stay together forever, but that's not the obligation. This is ethical relationship. It's an opportunity to serve the one in all by letting go of your crap via the crucible of the relationship. In an unconscious relationship, you're always working on the other person. In a conscious, ethical relationship, you're always working on yourself. Although I knew that in remaining traditionally married, I wasn't being totally true to myself, I had huge resistance to rocking the boat. There was the emotional piece. I knew I loved my husband. I didn't want to cause pain. I didn't want to disrupt the family. There was the ego piece. I didn't want to look bad, which I would once I showed myself to my husband as I truly was. My ego cringed at the idea of another failed marriage. What would people say when we had always given the appearance of being an ideal couple? And then there was the truth piece. I was very afraid of life without him. Imagining that possibility sent me into blind fear directly. Underneath that fear was a little voice that said, I can't make it on my own. Without him, I can't survive. I didn't want to acknowledge this weakness or the subtle sacrifice of my integrity for security. I knew I was doing myself wrong by allowing this fear to rule me, and I knew I was doing him wrong by allowing this fear to rule me. And it dawned on me that this dynamic had been operating in multiple areas of my life and for years. I had to admit that in some cases I had covertly traded my integrity for an illusion of security because I was afraid I couldn't stand on my own. And I discovered that this fear had kept me clinging in all my relationships, but it also drove me to seek independence from those same relationships because the soul needed to be free. Not free of the relationships, free of the fear. It became totally intolerable, and the only way to face it was alone. Once as a child, we were at the beach as a family. I ended up a little further out in the ocean, such that my feet suddenly didn't touch the bottom. I felt the surge of the water suck at my legs, and I thought I was being pulled out to sea. I panicked and screamed for my father on the shore. Swim, he yelled back. Just swim, he motioned with his arms. But I couldn't fight the undertow, or at least I thought I couldn't. I say this because I truly don't know if it really was the undertow or a fear of the undertow. But either way, I was afraid and paralyzed. I yelled back at him in a panic. I can't do it. Come get me. Come get me. My father seemed exasperated with me. Probably from his perspective, I was being dramatic. He dove in, swam out, and towed me back to shore. Through my tears, I felt relief that he had come to get me, but also a sense of failure. I doubted myself. Had I been in danger? Or had I not? He didn't seem to think so. Maybe I could have made it. Maybe I had imagined the feeling of the undertow. Maybe I'm weak, and that's why I had to be saved. And I suppose at that moment, a belief was formed that I can't do it. I can't make it on my own. If I get overwhelmed, I need someone to come in and save me. The forces of life are stronger than me. I can't make it on my own. Not only the forces of life, but my fear is stronger than me. That's a samskara right there. And I subsequently worked pretty hard to compensate for that weakness by being really strong and priding myself on pushing beyond my limits in all kinds of ways. Compensating for something isn't healing it, though. It's compensating for it. The insecurity is still there. And the belief was, I can't do it. I can't make it on my own. I'm too afraid. I need a man to come and save me. Yeah. Later, when my father died suddenly, disappearing from one day to the next, that samskara was awakened big time. I was about to take flight in life, leaving Juilliard and starting my career. And my father swooped in and saved me again, financially. The loan he had taken out to pay for my schooling functioned as a life insurance policy, and when he died, it was paid off in full. I never had to earn a penny to pay it back. My gratitude and relief were mixed with self-doubt, just as when my father had fished me out of the deeper waters. The old program played. I don't think I could have done it. I don't think I could have paid back that student loan on my own. I can't make it on my own. He had to come in and take care of it for me. I must be weak and need to be saved by someone stronger. The privilege of having been spared that burden made me feel a little ashamed, as if it were hiding the dirty secret of my true insufficiency. Secretly, I was afraid of life, afraid of the world, afraid of facing it all alone, and I hid it as best I could with the appearance of strength and confidence and independence. And my search began for a man who could complete that sense of terrible insufficiency, the doubt, the fear of life, someone like my father. After a series of devastating heartbreaks, I met a reliable man who made me feel emotionally safe, and I married him in the wedding of the century, which I talked about in the last episode, only to find in a short while that the security I thought I had found was illusory. He had believed my strong woman front, but he hated and scorned what he found instead, weakness and dependency. Lost, confused, and looking for an escape from the right man turned the wrong man, I had an affair with the man who eventually became my second husband. But do you think I solved the problem that prompted the first marriage? No. I went into the new relationship with that same pattern still driving me. There I was in the waves, still unconsciously looking for a man to save me from the scary ocean of life. We cannot escape from ourselves. No relationship can save you. The starting point in ethical relationship is to admit that you're all messed up inside. You just are. There isn't anybody who isn't. And so is the person you're in relationship with. We're both coming from our wounds. So let's just admit that. And since we're all reflections of one another, there's a reason why we're drawn to certain people. The point of relationship is not to stay together at all cost, but to grow wherever it leads. That person is there to help you grow, and you are there to help them grow, not by messing with them, controlling them, or trying to quote-unquote help them, but because your very presence is a mirror to them. Their presence is a mirror to you. This is extremely valuable. And if we could just respect it for what it is, without it having to be the one or forever, that would change things. If spiritual growth is your primary commitment in life, then the function of all relationships is to serve that commitment, because everything in your life serves that commitment. Whom do you serve? What do you serve? In an ethical relationship, love means I recognize that the other is a divine being just as I am, and that I have no claim over them, nor do they have any claim over me. We are both sovereign and free. It's not an open relationship. That's not what I'm talking about here. An open relationship, in my book anyway, is an avoidance of true intimacy. An ethical relationship is more about conscious monogamy, where you give of yourself completely, heart open. You support the other person's growth as unconditionally as you are committed to your own, even if it means they must leave you to keep growing. I think we have to regard all relationships today as healing relationships, spaces where we learn to heal ourselves through the reflection of the other, not healing or trying to fix the other person, but recognizing that I am the one who needs to let go of the part of me that's bothered by what someone else is doing. Why? Because I'm the one who's in here, and in here is where I'm experiencing every disturbance. It's acknowledging that we are not okay deep down, that we have a problem with a lot of things, and that the problem can't be solved out there, only in here, because that's where it is. It's acknowledging that we have a tendency to want to get something from others, that we tend to have expectations, that while we are in the process of healing, we need to stay awake to that and constantly turn inward, doing the work on ourselves, doing our best to let go of making the other person responsible for our happiness. It means 100% commitment to authenticity, dropping your masks, feeling your feelings, and keeping your heart open no matter what. There are no more games, manipulations, no more hiding or attempts at control coming from stressful need. There's no more projection on the other or trying to fulfill the projection of the other. You take radical responsibility for training your awareness, letting go of your pain, and being the master of your space. This is what I've learned from two failed marriages. But it's only a failure if you don't learn anything. Ultimately, any relationship can be an ethical relationship, not just intimate relationships. When you have let go of yourself, all your relationships are ethical because you no longer need another to fulfill you. You have let go of your samskaras and you're filled with the energy of love to overflowing. You don't need anyone else's energy. It's no longer about getting, but giving. Love flows through you unimpeded because that is our natural state and it wants to be shared with others. You're not trying to get love anymore, get attention, get what you need. The love that you are overflows like a flower giving its perfume to everyone, not just to some. When you let go every minute, you know that nothing is yours and no one is yours, not even your own children. You are in ethical relationship to all of creation. We human beings are made in the image of the Creator. We contain everything we need already. We are a closed system that can complete and magnify itself. It's our responsibility to get our own generator running. Only then, when we've released all need for another's energy, can we see another person clearly. As difficult as I still find it, to allow the form of the relationship with my husband to change, as emotionally raw as I still feel, I know that the relationship is on a more ethical basis now than it was during the years we tried to make each other the answer to our problems. Each had to face the fear, loneliness, addictions, hopelessness, and insufficiency we had used the other to cover up. It was heartbreaking to admit to myself just how much I had failed in lovingness to the ones I loved and who loved me most. In each of my marriages came a moment where the beloved in front of me said, "How could you do this to me? How could you be so cruel, so insensitive? How could you love me and hurt me like this?" And I had no answer. I was just as helpless to understand myself as they were, because I didn't know. I didn't know what I didn't know. I did not know what had driven me to certain behaviors, the suppressed, the shadow side, the ravenous werewolf fighting to survive, believing itself to be alone. I had never intended to hurt. I did what I did to live, to breathe, to be, because inside of me, things were not okay. When someone is drowning, they thrash around mindlessly. They may hit you when you come to save them. They may even pull you under. So our first job is to save ourselves, to be aware that we're unaware, and stabilize ourselves. That's ethical relationship. In honestly admitting and finally facing the fears that had driven me in my intimate relationships came a clear-eyed remorse for the ways I had used others in my unconsciousness. At the risk of mixing my metaphors, it was as if I had awakened from a lifelong bender on a road strewn with exploding fire hydrants, crashed cars, overturned fruit stands, and car alarms going off. Wow, what happened here? I clearly wasn't myself. I'm so sorry about all of this. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Thank you for joining me in the grace space, where you're always in the right place. If you love this podcast, I invite you to subscribe to it and submit a review.